This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Choose from over 85,000 titles and get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/Bobby Blackwolf. More information after the midpoint break. This weekend, Oculus announced a new prototype VR headset that makes the DevKit 2 seem ancient. Plus, Notch is indeed leaving Mojang because of people like me. Tonight is September 21st, 2014, and the Bobby Blackwolf Show featuring your calls and chat comments is up next. So not, you would say even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is Edwin Akeriper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O'Kay says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why it's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
Get your drinking mugs ready. We're going to talk about that a little bit. This is big news. What, Tokyo what? Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another edition of the Bobby Blackwolf Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwolf. If you're joining us live here on the Voice of Geeks Network, hello. Welcome. Head on over to our chat room. It's live.vognetwork.com. I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night. And you can check in. If you are on the site, you can check in, get some points, just like Fifth Dream and Tiger Claw were the first two to check in. If you are not live, don't worry. There is a passphrase somewhere that will annoy you in this episode. It will come in annoyingly, scare the crap out of you, and you can take that word and get some points as a reward for having the crap scared out of you with that noise. Sorry about that. A little bit later on, I'm going to be opening up our Skype line and our toll-free number for you to call in. Bobby Blackwolf Show on Skype, 1-888-36-GAME-1, toll-free in North America. You can call in there, or you can contact me on my website, bobbyblackwolf.com. So one thing I do kind of want to talk about really quick is that if you are here in the Atlanta area and you're going to a conference that's local here, I will be there. I will be speaking again. Siege, the Southern Interactive Entertainment and Game Expo. SiegeCon.net is coming up in 2 weeks. So it's October 3rd through 5th. And I am going to be speaking on a panel there about the stuff that we drink about. But it's kind of an interesting panel. It's not just like a straight, here's an Oculus Rift panel, which is what I did last year. This one is going to be Saturday at 3:30. And it's called Augmented versus Virtual, Which Reality Works for You? And it's actually kind of it basically talks about both augmented reality, which is your Google Glass and things like that, or, the Face Raiders game on the 3DS, things like that, versus virtual reality, where the entire scene is virtual. Augmented is basically it takes the current scene that's actually in front of you in real life and augments things on top of it. So it's going to be an interesting little panel discussion about the benefits and the drawbacks of each of the realities. So if you're going to be at Siege, you can check that panel out Saturday at 3:30. And another thing is that there will not be a live show that Sunday night. So not next week, but the week after, which is, I believe, October 5th. There will not be a live show that night. Depending on who I get to talk to at Siege on Friday and Saturday, there may be a pre-taped show with an interview that will play on the feed Sunday night and be on the podcast, or play on the stream Sunday night before OLR, and then go out on the podcast feed during the week. That is up in the air. That is totally contingent on what happens Friday and Saturday, so I don't make any guarantees about that. You can check my Twitter. I'll actually put out, and the Vogue Twitter will put out if there's going to be a show that night. Rachinator asked in chat if I'm still playing the Pew Pews, which is Destiny. I played it, and I have not gotten to the point where everybody else is. I think I'm like only level 15 just because of a lack of time to play it. And I know everybody else is up at level 20 and dealing with the end game crap and the engrams and the crypto tech taking things. And it's kind of interesting. Like, I haven't gotten to that point, so I don't understand all the gifs that people have made that everybody else thinks are hilarious, and I don't get it yet. But I'm sure that I will soon. I do still want to get back to it. I've gotten a little bit farther in the story. I think I'm now at the level 9 stories with my level 15 character. But I haven't gone in, played it, because I got the 3DS game that came out this week Theatrhythm, Final Fantasy, Curtain Call. And this is it's a sequel to Theatrhythm, Final Fantasy, which came out on the 3DS a couple years ago. It is also on iOS and Android and things like that. And it is the rhythm game for Final Fantasy tunes. And this version basically takes the original version, adds a whole bunch more songs, adds a couple more modes, and basically makes the owning the first version irrelevant. Like, there's no reason to have the first one anymore because all the same songs are in this. Even the game, even the songs I bought with DLC are on the cart here. And then there's other things that you there are other songs that they're adding in as DLC. Basically, there are three different types of rhythm game modes. They all play somewhat differently. They look differently, but they play pretty much the same. You tap or you hold or you slide your stylus. Not flick, but slide. They make it a point to tell you that. And they're themed after Final Fantasy. You know, like there's a battle mode where, you know, you've got your four party members on the screen and, you know, they're each attacking things or traveling through a place where there's only the one line, but it moves up and down and things like that. And then there's these extended modes, which like have a movie in the background that gets really annoying, especially if there's flashes and the thing moves, the thing you're supposed to hit moves around on the screen and you're supposed to follow it. You don't actually have to follow it with your stylus, but it's just, it's more following with your eyes. That's the same as it always has been before. What they added, some of the things they added in this version is they've added a button mode, where now instead of forcing you to use the stylus on the touchpad, you can actually press a button, any of the face buttons, and then you use the control pad, the control stick, to actually do the sliding or going up and down and things like that. And you have to use them in concert. It takes I didn't fully get used to it. You can also do like a marriage of buttons in the stylus, and there's also like a one-handed mode as well, so they actually even made it accessible to those who only have one hand, because there are people that don't have the use of one hand, and they can, so this allows them to play the game, which is always nice to have accessibility options like that. I just stay with the stylus mode. I still play it the old school way. I tried some of the other modes, and it just I'm not as good. And they added a quest system because there are a lot of songs. I think there's 200 songs on the cartridge. And instead of you trying to figure out which song you want to play, there are these little quest modes where actually have branching paths. It's a lot like if you've played the Find Me games that are in the Street Pass Plaza, and they have like the branching paths and stuff. It's like that, except you play songs. And how you do in the song means if you get the treasure, you can get to that point, and then you try to defeat a boss monster and get treasure that way. And you're leveling up characters that allows them to have spells that that go during battle. And you can actually create, I guess, a party of four. If they're sufficiently high enough level and you have the right skills on them, you can actually pass a song without ever touching your 3DS because your party will never die. There's a hit point meter. And I guess if you have a whole lot of healing spells and things like that, you can actually make it through an entire song without dying with the right party. Kind of neat to see people kind of doing that type of stuff. But they've also added online battles, so you can actually play online against somebody else. They had a kind of a Street Pass, like you could do it locally over the Street Pass function, where you could play people in your local radius, but not an online version. Now there's an online version, and the way it works is you're playing the battle mode, and then as you hit certain milestones, and I never figured out exactly what it is, you send something to the other player that messes with their screen. Either it will warp things, it will hide notes until the very end, it'll make things so like you have to hit a critical or else it's a bad, and basically you're trying to get the highest score by the end. And I was not very good at this mode, even though it was, and one of the things was you take in your party of characters, and that also affects things. Like, I think the one time I did do the online mode, I actually found somebody to play against online. I actually did better than them in the song, but because their characters were, like, level 40 and mine were level 10, she actually got more points. It was a female name, which is why I'm saying she. So they wound up winning, even though I kind of did better actually playing the song. So it was kind of weird like that. And it was their first win ever. And, like, they had tried, like, 10 other times, and I was the first one they finally beat. And I was like, oh, great. that makes me want to continue playing this mode, so I shut it off. But other than that, I mean, I do really, if you liked the first one, this is definitely, you know, going to be the one to get, and then you get rid of the first cartridge, because you're never going to need that first one again. But if you didn't like the first one, you're not going to like this one. Don't bother. Kaijudo asks, is that mode called troll mode? It probably should be. Because that's what you do. You troll the other player with, like, you don't get to choose what is sent over. There's like 12 different things that can happen to the other person. You don't get to choose what gets sent over, and you don't really get to choose when. It's like at a very specific point. If you hit enough criticals in that area or something, then it sends it over. And I was sending over just as many as I was getting. It's just I wasn't handling the how much it changes everything. As well as the other person. Probably because the other person had already played a couple matches online and I hadn't. There is an AI mode where you can practice against the AI. But and I guess I should do that if I really cared about the online mode. Eric Garbage, she says, Bobby is a sore loser. Hey, I did not insult the person. I just quit out of the mode. I did not accept the rematch. Because they wanted a rematch so they could get more points by beating me. CL says, I doubt a Final Fantasy music game would appeal to me. And if it, you don't think it'll appeal to you, guess what? It's not going to. It's not a game for everybody. It's, you know, for people who love Final Fantasy and people who love rhythm games, it's going to be great. If you hate either one of those, you're not going to get any enjoyment out of this. I am now waiting for Theatrhythm Kingdom Hearts. Just go ahead and get, you know, do the Theatrhythm Kingdom Hearts. I'm ready. My body is ready for that. MacDev says, I was skeptical about the first one, and it actually surprised me a lot. I didn't expect to like it as much as I did. I thought I'd like it. I didn't expect to like it as much as I did. One thing to note, if you are going to be getting it, don't do what I did and decide that, I'm going to be getting it anyway. I don't need to get the demo. Play the demo, because if you have a save file from the demo, you actually get a whole bunch of characters unlocked from the onset. Like, all 10 characters, I think, are unlocked. Instead of you having to go through and manually unlock them. And since I did not bother with the demo, because I knew I had already gotten it, put in my order with Amazon, so it would be here on the day of, I didn't bother playing the demo, and then I realized that everybody else said, I got my 10 free characters, and once you start a game, you don't get those 10 characters. So I can't go and get the demo now and then play and get them. I'd have to start over, start a new character, start a new save file. So even if you're going to buy it anyway, at least turn on the demo. Don't do that. And another thing is, if you are going to be getting it before September 30th, realize there are 2 free songs that are available as DLC until September 30th. If you turn on the Spot Pass notifications, it'll tell you that as well. But there are 2 free songs that are going to be free until September 30th, and then they'll go up to their 99-cent counterpart. So that's just some things to think about if you get it. Let's talk about some of the new stuff, since I'm blanking on talking more about the game and Destiny, and I do want to get back to Destiny. I still need to get back to Diablo 3. Like, I got Diablo 3, and then Destiny came out, and it's a great time to be a gamer. I'm not, like, waiting for things to come out now. There are things actually now I just need to make the time to play. So this weekend was Tokyo Game Show, and I'm not going to talk about anything that was at Tokyo Game Show, except there was that Final Fantasy 15 trailer with, like, the guys with the spiky hair in a car circling around a boss fight, and you know, I wonder if the What Is Love song was going to be playing, and they would bop their heads to it. That didn't happen, sadly, but there was a Final Fantasy 15 cinematic trailer. Actually, it had some gameplay in it, too, so that came out of Tokyo Game Show. But what else happened this week was the Oculus Kinect. This was an invite-only, or it was a curated convention and conference for developers of the Oculus Rift experiences and demos and games and things like that, and certain members of the press. I was not one of those certain members of the press that got invited to this. So a couple of things that came out of it is that they released a new prototype, or they demoed a new prototype. Now, this is not something to get too excited about, because they've done this before where they demoed a prototype and then, it morphed into something else. The Verge reports that the new prototype is called Crescent Bay, and it's another step towards the consumer version of the virtual reality headset. So it's as big of a leap from the DevKit 1 to DevKit 2, which, if you've never used either, that doesn't mean anything to you. But that's what the CEO, Brandon Uribe, said. The new headset features 360-degree tracking letting the Rift's external camera track the back of the headset as well as the front, making it easier for people to move without being constrained by staying in the camera's range. It's supposed to have improved weight and ergonomics. It's much lighter. And for the first time, it includes integrated headphones. I think Kaijudo was asking about this a while ago, if it supported headsets. And the original ones do, because you can put any headset on over it. This one actually will have integrated headsets with 3D audio in the device. So Crescent Bay was announced at Oculus Connect, which was in Hollywood, by the way. 3D audio is something that Oculus stayed out of for so far, but it's been a major focus of the Rift prototype, which is meant to make virtual reality more comfortable and immersive before it's officially released to consumers. Crescent Bay will allow for sustained presence. There's that word, presence. Now, this is not going to be coming out to consumers. Crystal Cove was the prototype they announced about last year at this time, and that's what morphed into the second dev kit. So this is going to morph into something more. They're just showing it. They were giving people 10-minute demos of this prototype to people at Oculus Connect. How the 360-degree tracking works is exactly the way the Dev Kit 2 tracking works, where there's an infrared camera. And there are lights on the front. There are LED lights or infrared lights on the front of the panel of the Oculus Rift. Now they actually have them on the strap all the way around the back, which is going to be kind of interesting for people whose hair maybe will come out over the strap or whatever. You know, you've got to be careful when you put the strap on not to cover it with anything. It also means you can't, like, wear a hat over it or something. And maybe that's why they have the integrated audio as well, is because then you don't want to put something big on the top, because I think there is like an LED on the top of the wrist strap or the strap of the head strap. So that's how they handle that. And then they've got the audio, which is all done in there, done with the headset and does all that tracking for you instead of having each software needing to do that stuff. But it's not a consumer version. This isn't like a Dev Kit 3 or anything like that. It's just something they're showing as to where they are right now. According to RoadToVR.com, which did have a couple people there as media covering the event, they said that the specs they're not talking about right now, and there's no pictures of the device. But they're basically saying this is all about the experience. If Oculus does their job right, nobody will ask about the resolution. No one will ask about the frame rate. People will simply don the headset and be transported. Oculus is heavily working toward that elusive goal of invisible technology. They have obviously not been on the internet, where it doesn't matter how good something is. It's all about how many pixels are on the screen. It could be the most fun game ever, but if it doesn't render at 1080p on their console of choice, or on the console of that's not of their choice, they will talk about it. It doesn't matter how fun the game is. It's all about the P's on the screen. So Oculus isn't sharing specs, but the best guess is that they're looking at a resolution of 1440p or possibly higher. So there's your P's there. Compared with the experience with Gear VR, it looks higher than 1440p, Gear VR being the Samsung Galaxy Note 4 VR solution that's being done by Samsung and Oculus. But it could have been better anti-aliasing. It looked incredibly impressive without the screen door effect, or the screen door effect itself was so reduced that he was focused wholly on the scenes in front of him. From Oculus's rhetoric when revealing the Rift Crescent Bay, I would guess they're running at 90 hertz, whereas the Dev Kit 2 runs at 75 hertz and your monitor runs at 60 hertz. But we can't be certain. LEDs are now on the back of the head strap, which means the 360-degree tracking is not only functional but impressively seamless. When turning completely around, I noticed just one hiccup in the tracking, but the rest of the 10-minute experience, there was no issue turning completely around. So it's going to be interesting. What happened is a lot of developers who were there now started having, you know, they looked at some of the demos that were in there. There was like an alien that was talking to you, and his eyes would follow you and all that stuff as you moved around. They put you in this space with like a 5x5 foot pad, and you could walk around in that space and all that stuff. But that's also entirely dependent on the hardware that was running it. And that's the thing that I've noticed about these demos. And with my personal experience with the Dev Kit 2, I still can't get it to run right, because my system is not fully up to date. And they were probably running this on very specific hardware and stuff. And so that's why I wonder if the consumer version is going to be as impressive as this stuff, because it's going to take a lot of stuff to get this stuff to work. One other thing they talked about at Oculus Connect that I am extremely, extremely, extremely excited about is that they finally made the announcement for developers like myself, like Loki, is that they are going to be adding Oculus as a deployment target in Unity, which if you're not a programmer, what a deployment target means is basically you can say, I want to compile this program that I've created for, let's say, Windows. So Windows is a deployment target. Mac is a deployment target. Android is a deployment target. For the longest time, how Oculus worked in Unity is that you basically dropped in a library, and it used some of the features of Unity, and you could say, okay, my deployment target is Windows with Oculus support, Mac with this Oculus library. And unfortunately, that Oculus library used the main thing it used is this feature called Render Texture, which is not available in the free version of Unity. You had to have a Unity Pro license, which was either $75 a month with 1 year commitment or $1,500. And Epic announced the Unreal Engine 4, where you could pay $20 for it for 1 month, get the engine, cancel your subscription. You wouldn't get any updates or anything, but you would have that, and it would be 5% of your royalties. And that didn't, you know, and so that took a big chunk out of people wanting to use Unity. Everybody saw that and said, oh, I'm going to use Unreal Engine 4. Now, here's what sucks is that Unreal Engine 4 demos don't run all that well on my computer either. So because it requires a much beefier processor and much beefier GPU. So I always preferred the Unity demos, and most Oculus games or most Oculus Rift stuff was made in Unity because of the ease of use, but you needed a Unity Pro license to do it. Now that they are making it an official deployment target, they're able to make it an add-on into Unity, and now people like me who don't want to pay for Unity can make Oculus Rift demos. It is going to be in Unity 5, but they actually say in the next, like they're saying days, not weeks, which means in the next couple weeks, people that are currently using the free version of Unity 4.5, I think is what they're on, will be able to make Oculus Rift things with the free license of Unity. You don't have to buy the pro version of Unity. So I am so glad that I waited. Because this also means that a lot more people are going to be able to make experiences for the Oculus Rift. And then, if they feel they have a good product, then they can upgrade to the pro version. And that's when they can have all the commercial success. But if you're going to just mess around and want to do some stuff, this is great, great, great news. Because now you don't have to pay anything. You don't even have to pay the $20 to get Unreal Engine 4. So this is great, great news for the community. Bathroom Man says, or I guess that's Break Man, says, paying for things is so overrated. It's not that paying for things is overrated in this sense. It's that $1,500 just to kind of play around with something is a little bit overrated. Or $75 a month with a 1 year commitment. That's a little bit overrated. I mean, the $20 a month was better, and that's why a lot of people were going that route. But a lot of people started in Unity. They're too far along, you know, learning Unity. They don't want to jump over to Unreal right now. This is going to help keep a lot of people into Unity. So there you go. Hope you're all drunk by now because I talked a lot about Oculus. But hey, once that Oculus Rift thing comes out for Unity, then I will start actually making an Oculus Rift demo. Since I can make free stuff and distribute them. And so if you have an Oculus Rift, maybe I'll do something. I have no clue what I'd do, but maybe I'll do something. So the other story that I do want to talk about is one that I talked about at first last week, and listening to last week's show, I realized that I'm part of the problem with this, because I talked about this, and this was the angle that I took about it. So we talked about Minecraft maker Mojang. They indeed were purchased by Microsoft. And the reason that Microsoft bought them is not for the reasons that a lot of people are saying, oh, Xbox One, blah, blah. They actually want to make it, you know, make it something for their mobile space. And the thing was, Mojang was not going to make a Windows Mobile version or a Windows RT version. They just didn't have the manpower for it. So Microsoft bought them at Notch's insistence. Notch actually went to them a couple months ago and said, hey, would you guys like to buy it? Because of the relationship that he had with Microsoft Even though he was very critical of Windows Mobile and things like that, he was very impressed with the way Microsoft handled the Xbox 360 version of Minecraft and now the Xbox One, that he approached them and said, hey, you guys want to buy this. And here's why he did it. He did it because we all, and I'm saying we because I'm part of this, we all put him on this pedestal. And we all reported on every little thing he said. And he couldn't handle the internet. He actually posted a post about how he's leaving Mojang effective pretty much very, 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 if not already by now, it will be very soon. On his website, notch.net. It actually took down his website, so he had to put it up on Pastebin. But he actually says that he doesn't see himself as a real game developer. He makes games because it's fun and because he loves games and loves to program, even though he programs in Java. But I don't make games with the intention of them becoming huge hits, and I don't try to change the world. Minecraft certainly became a huge hit, and people are telling me it's changed games. I never meant for it to do either. It's flattering, and to gradually get thrust into some kind of public spotlight is interesting. A relatively long time, and this is what Notch is saying, is quote, a relatively long time ago, I decided to step down from Minecraft development. Jens, who was the perfect person to take over leading it, and I wanted to try new things. At first, I failed by trying to make something big again, but I decided to just stick with small prototypes and interesting challenges. I've had so much fun with work, I wasn't exactly sure how I fit into Mojang where people did actual work, but since people said I was important for the culture, I stayed. I was at home with a bad cold a couple weeks ago when the internet exploded with hate against me over some kind of EULA situation that I had nothing to do with. This was the you can't make a pay-to-win server. I was confused. I didn't understand. I tweeted this in frustration. Later on, I watched the This Is Phil Fish video on YouTube and started to realize I didn't have the connection to my fans I thought I had. I've become a symbol. I don't want to be a symbol, responsible for something huge that I don't understand and I don't want to work on that keeps coming back to me. I'm not an entrepreneur. I'm not a CEO. I'm a nerdy computer programmer who likes to have opinions on Twitter. As soon as the deal is finalized, I will leave Mojang and go back to doing Ludum Dares, which are these like 48-hour competitions to make games in a certain theme, and small web experiments. If I ever accidentally make something that seems to gain traction, I will abandon it immediately. Considering the public image of me is already a bit skewed, I don't expect to get away from negative comments by doing this, but at least now I won't feel a responsibility to read them. I'm aware this goes a lot against what I've said in public. I have no good response for that. I'm also aware a lot of you were using me as a symbol of some perceived struggle. I'm not. I'm a person, and I'm right there struggling with you. I love you, all of you. Thank you for turning Minecraft into what it has become, but there are too many of you, and I can't be responsible for something this big. In one sense, it belongs to Microsoft now. In a much bigger sense, it belonged to all of you for a long time, and that will never change. It's not about the money. It's about my sanity, unquote. So people like me who were like, so you hated Oculus because of this, and what do you think of that? That was the problem. I was part of the problem. Now, I don't think, you know, he never heard what I personally said. You know, he doesn't know who I am, and that's perfectly fine. But he got a lot of that from people. And he got a lot of hate for things because he was Notch of Minecraft. And what he said was the opinions of Mojang and of Minecraft because he was the symbol. And he doesn't want to be the symbol anymore. He just wants to be a guy that just makes fun little games and stuff. And now he can do that because he's going to get a huge payout. He never has to worry about money again, which I know he says it's not about the money, it's about his sanity. But the money's going to help because now he doesn't need to do something that takes away his sanity. Dungeon Buster in chat over at live.vognetwork.com says, my impression is that he didn't want to carry on as a Minecraft messiah from the letter. Some people just really don't understand what to do with fame or want anything to do with it. And that's one of the things that's kind of interesting. I don't know if you guys saw the Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson about a year or two ago. Actually had Notch on as a guest. It was one of the most awkward things I've ever seen. Because Notch isn't a great interviewee. He doesn't give a lot of interviews at all. But he's not, especially to somebody like Craig Ferguson, who probably doesn't know that much about Minecraft. He probably has people on his staff that knew a lot. But it was really awkward. And that kind of showed that he doesn't really know what to do with all this fame. He, you know, and I guess with everybody, and you know, you look at him and he references Phil Fish, who ran away for the same reasons, and Dong Nguyen. He didn't reference Dong Nguyen, but it's just kind of the same thing where he ran away. Although I still think Dong Nguyen ran away because of the mafia or the Vietnamese government trying to come after him for a lot of that money. Social media is not—it's not the people on social media. It's just the fact that social media is kind of the problem. It's a tool that we use to get closer to people, but it also allows other people to get closer to us. And so, even though 999 people will say positive things to you, there's one person that will say something negative, and that can ruin your day. You know, maybe it was deserved. You know, he's definitely said some things that a lot of people disagree with. And, you know, maybe it's a lesson that, you know, social media can be a tool for good, but it's more likely a tool for evil. And Seal says he was talking about that, you know, when Notch backed off from the community and all but Twitter. Because Seal actually does some stuff, I think, in the Minecraft modding community. He's an op on an IRC channel and stuff. So he's had a front row seat to all this. And I'm going to actually scroll back up because he was saying some stuff. He says Seal's thoughts on Notch jumping ship is rather negative, mostly over how he did it. Most of the ports are third-party jobs. He's talking about the stuff at the Microsoft. So, but he basically, I guess Seal doesn't like the way that Notch left. He kind of put himself on a pedestal by backing off from the community. And he quit his job to work on Minecraft. Surely he figured it'd go somewhere. So there's some dislike of Notch for selling and selling out and trying to get away from people. And I guess people are going to follow him to tell him how bad he is for backing away. Tiger Claw says, stuff like this happens. You create something, and then by accident it becomes very popular and adored by the public. You could say the same about George Lucas when he created Star Wars. He was trying to make a quick buck, and his little movie became huge. Star Wars was not a little movie, even by those standards. It was a risk, but it was not really a little movie. Dungeon Buster says, Bill Murray does the same thing, but with Hollywood instead. He's incredibly hard to reach because he doesn't go into that culture, but face-to-face, he's like the nicest and most normal person who shows up at the local bar. And Seal wants me to clarify, I don't hate Notch. Seal doesn't hate Notch. He's just kind of disappointed that it went this route. And TDB30 theorizes, Microsoft will probably take the code inside and shut down the Mojang studio. Mojang are a bunch of amateurs compared to the developers at Microsoft. I'm not so sure about that because they don't typically shut down the studios that they buy until for a couple years. Then they shut down all those studios like Rare, I think Lionhead's gone now. You know, like all the studios that there was like a timeline of like all these things that Microsoft have purchased, like Ensemble Studios and things like that. And then, you know, they'll actually let them operate on their own and make stuff for a couple of years, and then they'll shut them down. So Mojang will be shut down. It'll just be in a couple of years. So we're going to take a quick music break, and then we're going to take your calls and more comments about any of these stories, or if there was something at Tokyo Game Show you think I actually need to talk about that's not the people driving in cars in Final Fantasy XV. Let me know. That's after this break. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show here on the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com.
Hey, this is Breakman. You're listening to the Bobby Blackwell Show live on VogNetwork.com. Teabag, not included.
Did I mention Crazy Chocobo is a DLC in Theatrhythm Curtain Call Final Fantasy? It is. It's Crazy Chocobo is DLC, and yes, I bought it for 99 cents just so I could send the screenshot to Act Deft and Breakman. And I play it a lot. So it's the top played game, and it's like you can actually set like one song to be like your quick start on the main menu, and it's Crazy Chocobo. And did you know that Crazy Chocobo, it's DLC. It's out right now, 99 cents. If you want to leave a bumper, just like Breakman, and I may put Crazy Chocobo behind because, by the way, it's DLC in Theatrhythm. You can send me an MP3 with just your voice to bumpers@bobbyblackwolf.com, or you can leave a voicemail on the toll-free number. Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you a chance to check out their service. You can get that 30-day free trial, get a free audiobook, and that's yours to keep even if you cancel before the trial is over. I don't think there are any audiobooks about crazy chocobos, and if they are, I don't think they would be 99 cents, but you can make any of them your free audiobook, even though there's no crazy chocobos. All you got to do is go to audibletrial.com/BobbyBlackWolf. So the phones are now open. Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-888-36-GAME-1, toll-free in North America. We could talk about the Minecraft thing, you know, but really Notch just wanted to get away from the creepers. Womp, womp. A lot of people are talking about what Microsoft may do. You got to realize, like, Microsoft bought it for the IP because there's a lot of kids. I mean, it's like Pokemon where it's, like, all on, you know, bedspreads and t-shirts and backpacks and lunchboxes and stuff. And there's that whole IP thing there. But it's also they tried to buy the community. And so I don't think Microsoft's going to try to upset the community. Members of the community are going to be upset anyway, just no matter what, because it's, you know, it's going to be considered selling out. And now it's, you know, it's not independent anymore. It's a AAA production. But I don't think Microsoft's going to be so quick. And Kaijudo actually brought up that they do have – I think they can't fire anybody for 2 years without massive penalties. Not that Microsoft can't afford massive penalties, but I think that there's 40 people that are staying at Mojang, and they all have like a 2-year guarantee from Microsoft. They can quit before then, but Microsoft can't get rid of them without paying a penalty. But Microsoft did just lay off like 800 more people or something. So we're like, hey, thanks. They had to use those salaries to buy Minecraft. Although one thing to note is that the money that they used to buy Mojang, since Mojang, I think, is a Swedish company, is that they actually used all overseas funds. So it doesn't count against, like, their American taxes or anything. It's all stuff that's overseas. So it's not – I guess it's a way to use that money without getting taxed or something. I don't know all the business tax loopholes, but that's one of the things that a lot of people bring it up, is that this is money that Microsoft already had overseas. And so they spent it overseas, and therefore it doesn't reflect – on their tax returns here in the U.S. or something like that. To register participation for this week's episode of the Bobby Blackwell Show on VogNetwork.com, use the passphrase Donald. TDB30 asks, what's a chocobo? Which is, if you've never played Final Fantasy, you wouldn't know. In the Final Fantasy games, it looks like a chicken slash bird, and you can ride it, and it's in the games it's used as a faster control method. To get from one place to another. And that's and every time, and the thing that they've done ever since the beginning, you know, probably since Final Fantasy II, I don't think Final Fantasy I had chocobos, I think Final Fantasy II did, is that it had the same general music, the same notes, but every version of Final Fantasy has their own take on it. And so you'll have like a brass band version here, or a samba here, or and in Final Fantasy XIII 2, they introduced a heavy metal version, and that's what Crazy Chocobo is. But there's a whole bunch of different variations of the Chocobo music. It's usually like whatever Day Chocobo, D-E, which they think that's like the Spanish way of doing things. ActDef will correct me. That's basically – so the Chocobo, it's basically it's a faster travel option in the games. When you're riding it, the Chocobo music plays whatever Chocobo – style of Chocobo music they have for that particular game. And it's basically – it's a faster way. And like a lot of times in the games, you can avoid enemies by riding the Chocobo and things like that. So it's basically – it's a faster method of travel in the game. Eswat says, I wish Destiny had Chocobos. The mounts aren't – the little vehicles aren't good enough for you? Or you could call in and talk about how the crypto tech or crypto mech or whatever he's called in Destiny screwed you over now that you're trying to get legendary engrams. I'm still level 15, so I'm still rocking the greens. Of course, like now, like I think everybody's like all level 20 or like level, like they're getting all the light levels now, so they're like, oh, we don't want to deal with you and your little small story. We're off on our strikes now and our raids. There's that raid they added, and like it took somebody like 10 hours to figure out how to beat it. Eswat did not like the fact that I brought up the Cryptarch. That's how it's spelled. Because basically the way, if you haven't played Destiny, when you get to a high enough level, you get these, the mobs will drop, the enemies will drop like what's called an encrypted engram. And they can be of several colors, like green is your rares and blue is even rarer than that. And then like I think like purple is legendary and orange is exotic or something like that. And you get these engrams, and then you take these engrams to this NPC that's in the main town called the Cryptarch. And when he decodes them, sometimes they are not as good as the engram that you got. So we finally do have a call here. Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
Hey, what's up? This is Kaijudo.
Kaijudo, what's up, man?
No, I just have a question for you and maybe all the listeners.
All right.
This is something I've been thinking about over the weekend. I've been thinking about like how many games nowadays are being patched. And a lot of people are saying, you know, developers are getting lazy. You know, they feel, okay, you know, I can put a broken game out there and then patch it out later. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but that's what a lot of people think. My thoughts was, I started thinking about when I was a kid and I used to get Nintendo cartridges and Sega cartridges and how I play those games. And I mean, there were bugs in those games. I mean, you know, there were a lot of game exploits that my friends would tell me about. But I never remember coming across a game that had such a bad bug that it was game breaking. And so my question to you was, can you remember in your game history coming across any old school games before the patches that totally broke the game? Like you literally bought a lemon. Like this game just can't work past that bug or whatever it was.
That I don't remember. I think there were game, like there were multiple versions of cartridges where they would fix things. And the only thing maybe is if you had like a save, like if it corrupted your save file, you could Rick's. There was, I think Jamie on OLR would be able to answer better because I think she might know more about, you know, where there was like a cartridge. I think there was a cartridge trade-in program for some game, but I don't know. I can't say that on the top of my head. And hopefully, Sky says there was that Bubble Bobble DS game. So this is an old school, but DS, the original DS, you couldn't patch those cartridges. So that was kind of one of the last ones you couldn't patch. I think that's what he's referencing is that the Bubble Bobble DS game had a game breaking bug, and you had to actually like exchange out the cartridge for it to work.
I had two copies of Bubble Bobble for the DS, and I don't remember coming across that bug. It must have been like a unique bug or something because I don't remember. The only DS bug I ever came across that was a pain in the ass, I think I even emailed you about it, was the Scribble Knots bug, where there was a certain level in Scribble Knots that you go there, you just get a complete blank screen.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do about it but shut your game off.
Yeah.
But, yeah, can't think of too many cartridge games that did that. So.
No, they tested a lot better. But they also, the games weren't as large. Like, the games didn't have as huge of a scope, so they weren't easy to test, but they were easier than today. And also, a lot of the times, you know, we have all the patching now. That way, people can bring games out sooner and try to get their money sooner. Yeah. And that's a lot of like the publishers pushing on the developers because now you can patch, so you don't have to test it all the way. Let's get it out the door before the end of the fiscal year.
Right. My thing is, I mean, it may never happen in our lifetime, but you know, if Microsoft was to go offline or Sony, and you had to, and your system, you know, the perfect storm of just bad things happening, like your system breaks. Like, what happens when you get a new system and you don't have those patches anymore for your game?
You know?
I mean, it may never happen, but. It's one of the things that, you know, it's part of the downside of all this patching.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, right.
Thanks for calling.
No problem.
So that's it. That's all the time we have. Somebody else actually tried to call. If you wait till the last minute, you might not get in. But coming up next here on the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com is Orange Lounge Radio. It's three people out in Sacramento, California, who talk about games for much longer than I do. They have a special episode tonight. So we usually like to check in with them and see what's going on with them. Sacramento, are you guys there?
We are here, Bobby. How are you?
I am good. So Bubble Bobble DS, was that kind of the answer that you had to that question?
I think it was, yes. And it was like the boss was missing in one of the levels or something. Because I remember here on OLR we hazed it for a long
level
time.
Level 30.
Was it level, like the boss was missing a level
30? Level 30.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Dark Soccer is not here tonight, so I don't know if that was the thing you were trying to get her to think of, but I'm pretty sure that was it, because I remember we used that for forever.
Well, I mean, I know, like, you know, there were multiple versions of, like, early NES cartridges and Super Nintendo. Like, I think there were, like, five versions of the first Donkey Kong Country.
Yeah, that's right.
But
there was.
But I don't think it was a game-breaking bug. It was just a bug.
I think a lot of, and I was trying to think of an example, but I know there were some in the past, like especially in the 80s. I mean, you think things are ported to a lot of things now. Go back to the days when you would have a game come out on Atari 2600, 5200, Commodore 64, Apple II, TI, you know, it was literally like MSX, like everything, those games. And in some of those ports, I think sometimes things went wrong and people never really discovered it because games aren't are made on a much bigger budget these days than they used to be in the past. I mean, in defense of developers.
And they were kind of wonky back then anyway. So it's like, oh, that's just part of the game, right?
But you have to remember, a lot of those Atari 2600 games, like, you know, classics like Pitfall, that one guy made them.
Yep, one dude.
Yeah, it was like
David Crane made Pinball. Or Pitfall, yeah.
So now, in this day and age, you know, you have a whole team. You don't see a whole lot of one guy made games, unless you're talking the indie scene, which is why, you know, something like Minecraft in particular, you know, took off and so forth. But, you know, coming out of big companies, so to speak, you don't really see a lot of one guy, one gal productions. Yeah. So
that was an interesting question. So Crazy Chocobo, have you bought it yet?
I have not bought the DLC, actually. I only went on to a Theater of the Mind and got the free DLC. I haven't grabbed any of the paid DLC yet. I've been enamored with doing the quests. It's a good way to play a lot of random songs that I wouldn't otherwise play. I just finished a long quest in Theater of the Mind, 23 stages.
Oh,
it was
wow.
20 stages.
Can we,
no eighth rights.
Can we get some crossover DLC from Mario Kart 8, like, you know, Chocobo Racing cross Mario Kart?
That is a Square IP I really miss, is Chocobo Racing. Thank you for bringing that up, because that was a true classic on the PlayStation. It's really sad they haven't. And it had some good music, too.
Yeah.
Good music and good tracks, actually.
Yeah. So it's kind of a bummer.
Have you tried playing online with Theater Rhythm?
I did, and I had a very similar experience to yours where the guy just, you know, wiped the floor with me. But he had already played for 9 hours. I could see that on his card. And now I didn't realize that the level out of balance thing was a problem, because that makes sense. His characters were all like level 80, 90, and I had walked in there with like level 10 characters thinking, oh, it's online. I want to check it out and try it. But that's I don't know. That seems kind of silly and detracting for, you know, new people to want to get in there. But whatever.
And the thing that I don't like is that you can choose. You've got your basic, expert, and ultimate modes.
Yeah.
But only in the ultimate mode can you do it without any of the power-ups.
Yes, and I'm not a big fan of the power-ups because they happen in the quest sometimes. Like the one that makes me the most mad is where it spins all the arrows, and I get like breaks all my combos. Otherwise, I'm decent at the game, but when those arrow spinning things come out, I can't function.
See, I haven't run that into that in the quest, but I've also only done the short quests.
That might be why. I think you have to do where you get more than one boss, and that might happen to you.
Yeah. So, but I mean, I'm loving the game, and like you said, I think last time is that there's no reason to have the first game anymore.
There really isn't. So that's unless, I guess the one thing about it is that you can play one of the songs from Final Fantasy Versus 13. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Has a song that was released on Theater.
And I did buy that. I did buy that song.
So, and that's the I can't imagine why, but they didn't bring it over to Theater Rhythm Curtain Call.
It's going
to
be a DLC.
Games changed a little bit since then.
Yeah. So you guys have an interesting show tonight.
Yes, we do. We have a big interview tonight. I'm really excited about this. We are welcoming to the show tonight Mike Builder. And you may not know the name, but the company Mike Builder is with Jackbox Games, which used to be known as Jellyvision. And so they are the folks that make You Don't Know Jack. And you know we love our game show games here at OLR. I know you love your game show games too, right?
Yes.
And so they have a new game show game that's out that's actually got the same narrator as You Don't Know Jack, Cookie. It's called Fibbage, and it's out on PlayStation 4, Xbox One. I believe it's an iOS game, maybe Android. I'll have to check with Mike. But obviously it caught my attention when it came to the consoles. And the really neat thing about this game is that you don't use the controller to play it. You use smartphones. Because, you know, pretty much everybody's carrying an Android or an iPhone in their pocket. Anything that can really connect to the web. Because you go onto thefibbage.com and you enter in the game code and you can play the game. And what was neat about it is that the first time I was introduced to this was with Flacco and his wife and Shane were all playing at Flacco's house. And Shane sent me a text and said, hey, get on Twitch TV, go to Flacco's channel and join the game we're playing. I'm like, what? I thought that wasn't a thing you could do yet on PlayStation 4, but Fibbage kind of found a way to do it. And sure enough, you can play. So I did it the next night or a couple nights later. We had a full house on Twitch TV of OLR listeners. It was a lot of fun. So it's interesting because playing games across great distances was one of the features they advertised for the PlayStation 4, right? And it's not out yet. But these guys over at a Jackbox found a pretty creative way around it.
But and also it's great in a party situation because basically the PS4, the Xbox One version basically just acts as the TV, the screen.
Yeah.
And basically, if you have a group of people at your house of, like, you know, like 5 or 6 or 8 people or whatever, they each have a phone.
Yep.
And they can, and it's you basically, what you can do, guys, is you go to a web page. Like, I played and lost, but I played. And I just went to a web page on my computer, and I had the Twitch TV feed over on one side. And I played on their TV just like I was there. But everybody has a phone or everybody has a tablet or stuff. You don't actually use the PS4 controller at all once you launch the game, right?
That's right. You know, maybe you have to press X to start. That might be a thing. I don't remember. But
no, I think because everybody else was trying to start the game, and you were like, no, don't start the game yet.
I think you have to press X to get from the launch screen to getting game code. I think that's the one time you use the controller.
Yeah, so I thought that was a really interesting. I haven't got it yet because I don't have anybody to. There's no reason for me to buy the $8 screen version yet because I don't have people over here. But maybe I could do a Twitch stream and people could make me lose to them.
There you go, and it's easy trophies too. Just saying.
Oh wow! There. Now I want to bring up this because Buchikawa said 1 versus 100 anyone, and when you did your stream, somebody from Jackbox Games came in.
Yep.
And he, and I'm going to spoil this on my show because I'm sure you'll ask about it. They actually said that You Don't Know Jack was supposed to be the second Xbox Live primetime game after 1 versus 100.
Fascinating, right? And I hate
Microsoft even more now.
I want the deets on this. I know nothing more than what you saw in that Twitch chat as well. But, you know, I don't know if our guest tonight can even really talk about that. But we'll see. I'll try.
But yeah, that would have been amazing. I am looking forward to that interview. What else are you guys going to be doing tonight?
A very big interview tonight. I want to also ask about, they teased a new You Don't Know Jack as well. That was on the Fibbage Twitter on Friday. So we might get some of the first information on that. I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that would be awesome. And your questions, of course, in our chat room, live.vognetwork.com. In other news as well, news out of Tokyo Game Show, including the brand new PT trailer, of course, everybody's talking about some of the changes over with Final Fantasy 15 or the Bros on a Road Trip, the Bro Trip Final Fantasy. I don't know if that's really what it's going to boil down to, but we will see. Project Scissors sounds like it could be interesting. And get your mind out of the gutter. It is a Clock Tower spiritual successor is what we're looking at there. And speaking of violent video games, in one part of California, you can now trade them in for ice cream. So we'll be talking about ice cream for violence tonight on OLR.
Was that a Leland Yee thing?
No, he's in jail or going to be in jail. One of the two.
Excellent. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you, as always, Bobby.
So that's it for me. I will be back live next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Voice of Geeks Network at vognetwork.com. Catch us live and interact with the show directly. There will not be a live show the following Sunday night, but there may be one that is on the feed. Maybe, maybe not. It really depends on what happens the week when I'm at Siege the few days before. Leave me a voicemail on any topic or leave a bumper if you're in the show on the toll-free number 1-888-36-GAME-1 or email me an MP3 to bumpers@BobbyBlackWolf.com. You can join the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/BobbyBlackWolf or Twitter @BobbyBlackWolf, or you can submit questions on my website, BobbyBlackWolf.com. Hey, if you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who doesn't know about it yet. But we would not be able to make the live show without the help of the chatters. So thank you very much, Dark Tetsuya, DC Nate, DJ Ronma S, Hecht, Misty, Sky, The Rob D, VXJation XV, Doomplague, Fifth Dream, Havoc978, ActDeft, Alan Alchemy, Bacon Bits, Buchikawa, Brad from Pod Culture, Burr, Seal, The Blue Guy, Drunk Man, Dungeon Buster, Eric RPG, Eswat, Flick, Game Guru, Hitstun, Ice P, Kaijudo, Kenzie, Kazin, Matt Q, Melted General, Monster B, MXC, Raginator, Surtur, TDB30, The Rob D, Tiger Claw, Toagak, What Up G, Yogazilla, Zappy, and Zombie Shaw. So that's it for me. I'll be back next week. Buchikawa says he's terrible at trivia games. This is actually a game about making other people believe your lies. Fibbage is awesome, and you should stay tuned to that interview. See you next week. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom, although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.